So now let me get to the next talk. It is MISP Threat Sharing Platform. It's a security related topic. And we have a speaker here. He's like a security person all over. It's his day job, like working security research and incident response, but he also commits quite a lot of the rest of his life to it, working with several organizations, also a security conference in Luxembourg, the Hack LU for Luxembourg, I guess. And so, yeah, he spends a lot of time with security and computers. And when he doesn't, he also likes photography, I've heard, and also some organic hacking in his garden. But yeah, this talk is about security. I guess that's what you're all here for. So give a nice round of applause to Alexandre Joulnoy. Thanks.
Wow. So good afternoon, Sha. It's great to be here today. And I'm really glad we have some people. Not everyone go to the lockpicking talk, which is a good move. So today we'll talk about information sharing. What I'm doing as a day job, I would say two main parts. One is incident response. I do work for Circle, which is a computer incident response center in Luxembourg. We take care about incident response for the economical sector. And in parallel, I'm one of the core team members of the MISP project. The MISP project is an open source software for doing information sharing. And I will talk about information sharing and the aspect of it. So the first thing, there's always a bright side of the story and a bad side of the story. So today I will do two things, only one slide on the bright side, and I will talk about all the mess, the shit happens, you know, all the bugs, error, mistake that we did after us. Because basically MISP has been built from that. So currently MISP is quite a successful project. At Circle, we use it for sharing information with more than 750 organizations worldwide. We have more than 1,500 users using daily the platform, so actively using sharings, commenting, and so on the platforms. So it's quite successful. The thing is, for Circle, MISP is just a tool that we maintain to be able to sustain what we are doing. That means information sharing, incident response, and basically collaborate on incident response. And besides the tool itself, we do a lot of other things that are linked to MISP, which is the libraries and so on. I will go into detail later on. And what we try to do, and that's why I'm here today, it's to share with you what we do, and then we can see if the information sharing aspect could be used in other fields, not only information security, but maybe for, I don't know, spotting threats in a conference, maybe that would be a way to do it too. So that's the bright side of the story. Now, the reality is a bit different. When we started MISP, it was in 2012, it was more than 5 years ago, we did a lot of mistakes. Our first mistake in 2012 is basically, as a cert, we do collaborate with other certs. So that means on a regular basis, you go to meetings, you share information about malware that you are doing reverse engineering to, but we were a bit surprised during one of the sharing groups. So we had a sharing group in 2012 in Europe, in Brussels, and what we discovered is basically we were not able to share in advance on what we are working on. So basically we had two different thirds in two different countries work on a targeted malware, not together, so in standalone, and then after 2 months you basically discover that we were working on the same malware. So it was basically a huge, I would say, a huge gap. And it was like a kind of a pity because basically everyone in different certs had software engineering capabilities. We could do programming, we could code our tools and so on, but we basically were not able to start with a tool for sharing. So at that time, Christophe Van de Pla, who did work at the Ministry of Defense in Belgium, did a project called CyberDevSec at that time, which was a kind of pre-version of MISP for doing information sharing. And that's where it started. It's basically on our own mistakes, we discovered that we should build a tool. And MISP is basically built like this. It's basically getting feedback from users, people contributing back, and then we improve the platform. So MISP is not at all built like, you know, those huge waterfall models, tons of documentation on paper that no one's read about. We design software based on the requirement of user on a, I would say, day-to-day basis. So that means if an issue pops up in GitHub, we try to figure out which one is really useful for information sharing, and then we incorporate it. So nowadays, MISF is basically really a community-driven project, because it's basically everyone is contributing to this project. And you'll see that it's quite a bit of paradoxical, because MISP is used by military sector, thirds, intelligence services, but it's used by civil society tools and malware reversers and so on. So it's a very large scope of different users. And based on those different users, we started with our core user, what we do every day. That means malware reversers. People doing reversing of malwares. So those users, and I'm included, I like to be stay on, you know, on a terminal-based interface. I don't want to go to graphical user interface that are complex and so on. And this drives a lot the MISP development. It's really based on what we want to have as platforms to make it work for us and to not be, you know, bored with complex user interface and so on. But the thing is, more and more people were using the platforms, more information we are putting into the platforms. We have seen that other people were interested into the platforms. So when you start to share malware samples, and for example, reversing the samples, so the information, the indicators of the samples, other people came and say, yeah, but you know, those indicators might be useful for detections, might be useful for tracking down the attackers and find back the information and so on. And over the years, more and more people were basically starting to use the MISP platforms. And nowadays, I don't know, we know that around the world there's around 3,500 MISP installed, different communities, trusted groups. So you see that it's a very versatile group of people. And up till recently that we start to have more and more people using MISP to share information about fraud, financial fraud, like bank accounts and so on. So you see that MISP initially started as a very small project and grew organically to something that's more usable to different group of users. But this comes with a big issues. The people sharing the information have different objectives. When you share information, you might share for detections, and that's usually our use case as a third. We want to know that if a constituent is compromised, has been already compromised by an attacker, an adversary, but some other users, imagine an internet service provider, sometimes they provide, you know, those security services that they want to block, for example, phishing web pages. But if you use MISP to share phishing web pages, sometimes you want it to notify the organization hosting the phishing pages. But sometimes you have these kind of things that are used for blocking. So you see already conflict of interest. It's basically a conflict between blocking things, meaning that if you have false positive on blocking, it's not very good. But if it's only a detection and you have a small rate of false positive, it's still fine. So you see that you still have a very conflictual of way of using the information. So sharing in WASPART, you have different communities of people sharing, but the objective of those communities might be completely different. And then you end up into such kind of conflictual things. Then you have other groups of people that are very interested into gathering the data, to compare the data, but who don't really care about, for example, false positives. They are even eager to get false positives because they do intelligent analysis of the data itself. So you see that you basically have three different objectives, but you develop a platform that can be used for those three objectives. So all the features in MISP, we try to accommodate those kind of things. And it might be conflictual sometimes. But that's just one part, technical problems. Then you have, I think, the biggest part of the problem when you do information sharing, it's the social aspect of it, the human aspect of information sharing. And one of the big one is the social interactions. I mean, if you have thirds sharing information, would you share information between the Hungarian third, the Chinese third, and the US third, or do you trust those organizations? Or do you evaluate the trust, what kind of information that you can share, what they will do with information? That's very complex. We try to accommodate the platform to support such kind of things, but you will see that at the end, it's always a human problem. So it's a challenging one. For the more than 5 years that we are doing it, we discover many things, but especially a lot of things on the human and how they interact with sharing information. Another problem that we have seen very often, and it was, I think, in the past, the legal restrictions, it's the legal side or the legal framework that blocks you of sharing information. And that's a major problem, because a lot of people are afraid of sharing due to the legal restriction in their countries, in their region, of their organization, so it might be one of the biggest challenges. I have a little story of that. It was another mistake that we did and that we solved at the end. For the community that we run, initially we had one of those 4 pages end user license agreement explaining how you could share information and so on. And we had some companies joining the project, the communities, and at one point a large US company read the document and the lawyers look at it and say, you know, guys, this document is nice, but we want to change this section and this section and these sections. But you know, if you have a trusting community to share information and you have a different contract, it will not work. So we were thinking about it and we were like, yeah, maybe we are on the wrong track, on the wrong side. So we basically dish the end user license agreement. Our lawyers was like, what do you want to do? So we was a bit scared, but we changed the models. And we basically said, no more license agreement, just two simple things. You have to respect the classification of the data and you are responsible for your own data. That's it. And afterwards, it was much more easy to get people in because they don't have to involve their legal teams or on very minimal things to review a document because they have no document, just basic rules that are linked to how to use information in the platforms. So you see, sometimes legal restriction could be on double-sided and so on. If people are interested, we can talk later on outside the talk because it's a huge discussion about GDPR and stuff like that. But we have some, I would say, predefined and pre-template how to use it, so we are on a kind of good ground on it. And then you have additional practical restrictions that limit you to share information, and we try to solve those kind of things in the MIS platforms, like we don't have information to share. Sharing information is not only an information itself that you want to share, but the validity of information. So some organizations did not understand that they could share, for example, a flag, like saying, oh, I know this information, I've seen this information, or I trust this information, and so on. And it's a way of sharing information. So a lot of organizations think, ah, I have nothing to share, but on the other end, they have a lot of information to share that could be useful for the community. So that's quite interesting because over time, we have improved the tools based on this kind of limitations. And that we have seen in the, I would say, past years is if you want to tackle security incidents and you basically want to be better than the adversaries, and we are still not better than the adversaries, the best thing is to share at least more or at least a bit smarter. Because, you know, adversaries are sharing a lot. I just take an example, Five Eyes, UK, Australia, US, they are sharing quite a lot. You basically have access, they have access to their data and between each other automatically, and you can share the information to defense yourself. It's a pity. So that's why, for us, if you share information as early as possible, even at large scale, you might be better protected. And that the sharing part is really, but it's tough, it's not easy to do. So going back to MISP itself, MISP is becoming, MISP project itself is quite large nowadays. So you have the core project, which is the backend, supporting the API, the user interface. It's a mix of PHP and Python. And then you have additional projects that are submodules in Git for the different projects. One of them is the modules in Python, so you can expand the user interface, you can expand import and export functionalities of MISP by writing simple Python modules, so you don't have to know the core of the MISP module, so it's one way to do it. Then you have additional things that pop up later on. For example, taxonomies came later because we discovered that a lot of people are talking about classifications. But you know, it's very nice Word document that no one wants to read about classifications. It's not machine readable. They are not common. So it's a complex thing. So we started to have libraries of the common classifications. And I will go back to that part. It's quite important because it's if you cannot classify an incident, you don't know exactly what is behind. Then you have warning list, stuff like false positive. You want to know in advance if it's potential false positive. We share such kind of list in advance. So you can even use it in MISP and in other tools. All the things I'm talking about here are open source software. The libraries are even released into public domain licensing, so you can even reuse it into your own tools and so on. We do the same with the galaxies. It's all the threat actors, so we start to have vocabularies about the adversaries, the different threat actors, or even the countermeasures that you want to take against specific adversaries. So to summarize itself, MISP, and that's the generic terms, and it's just a platform to store indicator of compromise, threat indicators, and is an open source software. That's basically it. Now you have core functionalities that make the software interesting to use on a day-to-day basis for operational teams, security teams. One of the most important parts is the automatic correlations. It's basically when you start to share information, you want to know if you have duplicates, if other people are sharing the same information, if an adversary is sharing the same backend infrastructures, and so on. And you have a lot of things like collaborating and so on that are key to do information sharing. Then we are an open source project. We don't block people into kind of cloud services, whatever. People can get the data in and out as they much, and that's as they like. And MISP itself has a ton of functionalities for using the data. So for example, if you enter an IP addresses into MISP, automatically you have API where you can export it into BRO, Snort format, Suricata. You can export it into RPZ format if you have doing blacklisting into DNS servers or sync calling. So really, MISP is designed to do import-export as much as it can. And I will explain later on, there's a feed format that you can use to do synchronizations between external data and so on. And as I said, MISP is built on basic trial and errors. We don't have very long-term roadmaps, but the thing is growing at the rate of really the use case and so on. So the main part of MISP is the sharing aspect. As a third, what we have seen, a lot of models in security are based on commercial models, where you have a producer and a consumer. We basically think that is a wrong way to do it for sharing information. If you want to share information, it should be two-way, in any case. It's not forced to be two-way, but you should be able to do it. So in MISP, you don't have any core producer, consumer, but everyone can be a consumer and everyone can be a producer. So if you have a MISP, you see the gray one here, it's basically you have a MISP instance, you create an initial event, and then depending on how you set the distributions, those events will be propagated back to other MISP instance. So you can add additional attributes, like for example, if you see an IP address that is wrong, you can propose to the editor that, oh, guys, I think you did a typo on the IP addresses there. And it's very common. I mean, for a huge report containing tons of MD5 hashes, IP addresses, URLs, and so on, you have typographic error, you have mistakes, and stuff like that, because it's the analyst at the end. So that's the way that MISP works. Everything that you share could be duplicated, contributed back, and sent back to the original contributor. And that's very important for us. Another point is, everyone should be able to contribute, not only highly technical people, but support staff or people that are just basically in face, doing face-to-face interaction with users and so on. And then the thing is, MISP has a simple concept of attributes, which if you generalize or overgeneralize, it's like indicators, but if you go a bit further on that, it's always filled with a context around it. And then those indicators could be vulnerabilities, could be financial indicators, and so on. So it's quite flexible. And all attributes are solely based on usage. So we don't follow, you know, a huge consortium saying, oh, you should use this attribute and not this one, and so on. It's only based on people, on what they used, really. So if we are in Luxembourg, you know, there's a lot of banks. We got a lot of requests from banks to have way to share financial indicators. So we basically extended MISP with financial indicators. If you have to wait for a standard to expand this kind of attribute type, it might take months or years to be in the standard. In MISP, it's a bit different. You can generate new attributes. As long as you have the up-to-date version of the software, you can share this information. That's basically it. In MISP, you can even, and it's not anymore in the next release, it's a today release, you can even add and create adversary groups. You can create your own community of information that you want to share. And those can be internal, that you keep it for yourself, or can be external, and you share with third parties. So contributing data to MISP, you have various ways to do it. As I mentioned, initially it was malware reverser. So you like to use VTI, console interface. So you have a full-blown API. For the one using Viper, for example, you can have a full-blown Viper modules to do interaction with MISP. And you can stay in Viper, do everything from there without going to the web interface. If you hate your web interface, it's fine. You can go there. And you have plenty of integration with sandboxes and so on. Lot of proprietary ones, but open source ones like Cuckoo, for example. And we have other way to contribute. People can do sightings. I will show an example. One of the things that we have is a free text import. This one is quite interesting. You know, when you do incident response, very often you receive an email from someone. An email containing information like, oh, you know, I got those indicators. I don't know if I can share them, but I will give it to you. You should have a look. In MISP, you have a free text import tool. So you just paste raw text. Could be anything, emails, PDF conversions, anything. And automatically, MISP will try out to figure out if those are potential indicators. And if those are indicators, you have a kind of result import where you can see already correlations. So if you know about it or not, and if it's not, you can just create an event. So even in MISP, you can create events very quickly. We have API and extension in MISP where you can basically use a spam trap and automatically send all your spam to MISP and do correlation and so on. So you can use MISP in different way, but some people are doing that. We are doing that for some kind of what we call playground or junkyard MISP. So it's an easy way to collaborate. And in this way, you can still have your flow of information from emails and automatically check it out if you have missed the data. If you don't, you create an event. If you know the data, you don't create an event. That's straightforward. It's one of the functionalities, but I will not go through all the functionalities. Another thing that we have seen is some people are willing to share. They really want to share, but they don't want to share their name. I take a random example. You are a huge bank. You want to share information, but you don't want to have your link, your name associated to this event. So you don't want to link your name back to this incident. For some sometimes good reason, because some people might think that this bank, if you share the information, have been targeted for this malware, which is not usually the case, but it could be the case. So there's a way in MISP where you can delegate the publications. So instead of the bank itself, they ask a third party to do the publication for them. So for example, they can delegate the bank and delegate to Circle, third, the publication. And us, as a Circle, we can review the information, we can discard it, or we can publish it. So it's a kind of way to do pseudo-anonymity, so you can still share information. You know it's your information, but it's under different names, so you don't have the kind of, you know, fallback. But at the end, it's still the one publishing that gets the responsibility of publishing the information. There are a huge different way of sharing information in MISP, where you have sharing groups, you can even cherry-pick organization and so on. If you want, later on, we can do a demonstration together and you can have a look at it. Another thing that we have, it's the sightings report. So sightings is a way to say that you have seen something. So in MISP, you have attributes, and you can basically just check like a like button or dislike button to say that you have seen these informations. It's a way to contribute. Without sharing the indicators, you can basically say, oh, I've seen that too. Or I don't like this one because this one is a false positive again on my one. And then you can have an history of all the contributions of activities and so on. It's very useful. If you take some Russian actors, for example, they tend to reuse infrastructures, but at very regular intervals, and they switch off their infrastructure to make like, oh, it's take down, it's fine. But 3 months later, they come back. With the sighting support, you can see such kind of stable infrastructure that are basically appearing and disappearing back. You can export the data. You can automatically do it from an API. So for example, you have an intrusion detection system that can automatically set the sightings. And you can see that the indicators are within your infrastructures. So sighting it's quite extensive in MISP. You have many use cases. And I know some users using it in a different way. For example, that some teams have seen it, or some tools within the organization have seen it. For example, if you have honeypots in the infrastructures, you can basically use it for basically seeing that you have seen it too. So it's quite interesting. And then automatically, this is linked to the tagging that you use, the classification, and so on. you can automatically see that if a specific thread actor is coming back. And that's a way to basically track down what's going on into your indicators. Another thing that we introduce, so it's another mistake that we did. At the early version of MISP, we had what we call tagging. So everyone could tag an event, just add a tag, a specific tag, to an event. But this one was a complete disaster. I mean, I don't know how many different ways I've seen traffic light protocol, TLP white, for example, written. So you have TLP double point white, TLP space white, TLP dash white, or just TLP white together. So it was basically a complete disaster. So what we discover is if we have taxonomies and classifications, it must be globally known by everyone and using the same terminology. So we look around on the internet to find out, you know, all those complex RDF models and so on. They're all very nice on paper, but practically it's crap. I mean, you cannot use it. You can use it for some machine to machines, but if you want to have using by human, and then we found back something done by guys from Flickr at that time in 2004 called triple tag, and it's basically machine tag, where you have a namespace, a predicate, and a value. It's very simple. You can still read it as a human, but it's parsable by a machine. So we decided to have libraries of taxonomies describing the same format. So for the ones that are familiar with admirality scale, it's a scale in NATO to define the source reliability, for example. So you see that in one simple tag, you can say that this is an admirality scale and the source reliability is fairly reliable. You have C and you have an expanded version that is human readable. That's it. There is no complex XML format, so you don't have to have an RDF parser and so on. That's it. And we introduced that, I think, more than 2 years ago. And nowadays, we have tons of taxonomies. So the nice thing with it, within MISP itself, you can basically classify the informations. You saw, for example, you have estimative language. You might have stuff like Europol incident classifications, ENISA one, and so on. And you cannot automatically see in the platforms what are the most commonly used tags and see what are the ones that are used for classifications. And it's a nice way to find out, I mean, all the information, because in the problem with cybersecurity indicators, you might have tons of indicators per day, but you don't know to what kind of information they're related to. So that's quite important. So what kind of taxonomy do we have? We have tons of NATO classifications. We have traffic light protocol for the one that know. We have some specific one that we built, like the open source intelligence one, or the classifications, various classifications, and people can contribute. It's a very easy way to do it. You have a JSON files, and those classifications are even reused in other platforms. All open source, very easy to use. An example here, Loki ransomware, indicators about a Loki infections. You see that you basically have the organization that contributed, and you have the tags that are basically the classifications of the ransomware. And the nice thing with it is as those classifications are globally shared among the different users, they basically rely on the same definition of the terms. So you can easily find out, okay, the same terms. And in information sharing, there is an important part too. A lot of things are done by imitations. So an analyst imitates another analyst. So better you do classifications, you see other analysts like, oh yes, this classification is correct, I will use it too, or they start to argue about you that this one is not specific enough, and then you improve it. And what we have seen is, for the past 5 years, I mean, we have seen initially that events were 1, 2, or 3 tags. Nowadays, you have tags at attribute levels, event level, and you have sometimes between 10 or 20 tags on a specific event. So you see that the classification itself improved by people using it. So that's very important for us. Something else that we do, you know, on the internet, you have tons of OSIN feeds. So you can basically get CSV files at random places about malicious IP addresses, phishing website, whatever. So in MISP, we did a feed systems where you can basically just point to an URL and say, okay, this one is CSV, it's free text, just like the free text import. And automatically, we'll find out the attribute type, and it will find the existing correlations.
And that's quite nice because you can basically see the correlation automatically from a MISP event without ingesting this event. Another thing is, when you have this kind of things, you can even automatically correlate the informations from undigested information. So this information is still not in your MISP, but you can see if you have correlations. An example that we had when the US CERT did the report about Grizzly Step, the Russian activities, the first thing that we did, we put it into MISP to see the correlations, and we see tons of correlations with Tor exit nodes. So even the report was not saying anything about that, but you see automatically the correlations with the Tor exit node. So is the report useful or not, depending on the thing that you do with it, but at least you can automatically see that those indicators were part of Tor exit node feeds. By default, we have like 30 or 40 default feeds. You can add yours. It's a simple JSON file too. And we saw a talk from Alex Pinto. I don't know if some people know Alex Pinto. He did a project called MLSec, where he wants to measure securities. And he has this one he called a TIQ test, which is a test for testing a thread feed. So what is the quality of a feed? So we came with an idea where if we can import those feeds, we can compare them. We can see all overlap those different feeds. So in MISP, you have what we call an overlap thing. So I don't know if you see it from here, but it's basically a matrix. You have all the feeds that we import, and you can see the ones that are overlapping with others. Some are basically telling that they are aggregating information, which is fine, but some are trying to sell you feeds that are basically coming from other feeds. So it's an easy way to quickly see, okay, does it work to basically acquire this feed because it's composed of this OSN feed, for example. So it's an interesting way. Over time, we want to improve that to have a kind of timeline visualization. So in addition to the overlap matrix, we can see the evolution, so where the data is coming from, so which feed is gathering the data, and then where from the other feed is moving to. So it's one of the benefits of using the feed part. So we have discovered that some people are using MISP to just do purchase of feeds, so they just ask for proof of concept to some vendors, they acquire the feeds, and then they just compare it to see how it looks like. Okay, it's one use of it. We didn't think about that one at the early stage, but it's a way to do it. So, some use case where information already helped. Very often I heard a lot of people that want to share after the incident is finished. They say, okay, I have a nice report, it's packaged, I want to share. But I think it's a complete mistake. We had a very interesting case. It's a bank that wanted to share information, but they had no resource, no reverse engineering teams, and so on. So they basically use MISP as pushing an event with a binary that they found on their infrastructures that they didn't know about. And they just say, okay, if someone wants to have a look, have a look. So sharing early in a pre-investigation phase is working. It's something that we didn't thought initially, but it's a way of getting information. Especially that if you have a large community of malware reverser, a lot of people, what they want is fresh malware. They want to have to, you know, think that they want to look into new interesting things. And doing kind of early sharings, it's usually much better than basically lay back and wait to share the information. Another thing that we have seen is in MISP, you can share between brackets, those cybersecurity indicators, so IP addresses, hashes of sample, and so on. But you can share bank account details where the information is going to. So we discovered that, for example, that some kind of malwares are buying the same sharing mule networks. So you see that you can link and make the ties between the malware use case and which cyber criminals are buying the mule network, because usually mule networks are not so diverse, and they have to buy the services to third party. Another thing that we discover, I'm pretty sure that every one of us have seen it, it's fake invoice. You receive a paper at your place asking you to pay an invoice, and this invoice is basically a fake one. What we have seen is the bank account details in those fake invoices are usually the one the same used for the mule account. So you see a tie between the mule account, the fake invoice system, and the malware for the banking systems. So it's a quite of interesting things. Another thing that we discover when you share information, you must share regularly. If you just share once, you know, in a year, it's interesting, but not so much. If you share, for example, lucky ransomware every day and so on, you start to see regular or stable infrastructures. We discover some core C2 of some malware and some attackers based on that. So we found basically the stable infrastructures in a complex infrastructure. So it's very important that if you share regularly or more people are sharing regularly informations, you can find back those kind of things. So as an example, I have one here. This one is a lucky ransomware that we get, a lot of malicious website. So it's a huge mess. They use compromised machine and so on, difficult to find. There's another lucky ransomware. We found Dire exploit kit and Dire inflections. We're like, okay. But this one single point, these machines. And this machine was basically the one that the attacker used for basically testing his infrastructures. And it was the core one. So it's quite interesting. So more you share the informations, more you see that those stable systems. So it's like in biology. At some point, when you do a lot of long-term monitoring, you start to see some stable things in your infrastructure. Same, because it's biology and cyber criminals are usually not far away from each other. So, and that's for me, the most important part is the MISP is just a tool. So for us, information sharing is just practices. And every day that you do mistakes when sharing information, you can improve the process. And that's the things for us, it's very important. The imitation aspect, when you share information and so on. So for us, it's information sharing really comes from practices and what you are doing. So MISP is just a tool. It's an open source tool. Glad that a lot of people are using it. So don't hesitate to provide feedback, test it. On the GitHub pages, you'll see you have many sub-projects. And the thing that we want is, at some point, we want that MISP works like what the attacker are doing. They are sharing, they have their tools for sharing and so on, that we want to mimic at some point some aspect of what the adversaries are doing to at least to behave at least like them for some good side. So I mean defense aspect. And another thing is, in information overflow is usually what people are afraid of. But if you can filter, classify the information as early as possible, the overflow becomes an advantage. Because you know where the information is coming from, you can automate the things. For example, we do takedown requests automatically from things that we get. So if we get an incident or report containing, 2,000 URLs of compromised machines, we do automate takedown requests. So we send notification and so on. We have a full tools that is belonging to the MISP project where you can basically do takedown notifications. So that's basically it for me for today. If you have any questions for the community that we run as Circle and you want to join, feel free. As I said, the MISP GitHub page is basically containing all the sub-projects and so on. The MISP project page usually explains how you can get with MISP. You have, for example, Vagrant installations, VirtualBox image if you want to test it out. We have a MISP Summit, is the third one, before the ACLU conference, and we do an open source security hackathon the day after ACLU. All the core team from MISP will be there, so if you want to join, you're more than welcome. So thank you, and if you have any questions, feel free. Thank you very much.
Yes, thank you very much for this interesting talk. We have questions, I see. Great. Can we have sound on
Should
the
work.
Microphone?
Hello?
Yes.
Yeah, good. Actually, I have two questions.
Yeah.
First question is, how do you make sure that people that are sharing information have the same level of knowledge so that you don't get crap fitted to you? Do you do a training before that? Explain people what is the basic thing that they need to share? I mean, how do you process this?
Well, it's a very good question. It's a large one. Because the thing is, yes, two things. Yes, you're knowing the capabilities of different teams. That's why we have a classification now that we created recently to evaluate the capabilities of a specific teams. So you can even bond a specific organization to a tag, and this tag is classifications. We do training in Luxembourg where people come over, and when people come over, we basically classify them into our MISP, that knowing those one, and they can join our community. But it's indeed one of the biggest problems, because a lot of organizations might have an initial bootstrap to learn how to share information. So it's a difficult one, but the thing that we try, and I think it's the same for between bracket open source contributions. When the first time you get a pull request from someone that you don't know, usually they try to do something, but it basically failed. So we try to catch those one and to explain to them, okay, I've seen your event that you try to propose, and then we ask commands, we do proposal. In MISP, you can do proposal on the event. So what we try to do is to basically learn or to explain to people how to use the platforms. But it is indeed one of the biggest problems that we have. It's the bootstrap of the analyst itself, because they are all at different levels.
And I have a second question.
Yeah.
MISP is definitely a great tool for information sharing. What about the incident response, the whole full cycle of it?
Yep.
Do you plan to get that into MISP or yep. plan to use up other?
For example, we have a very tight work with the Hive. I don't know if you know the project. The Hive project is done by Banque de France. It's an open source project. They have MISP connector for import and export. So it's more like a trade hunting platform. So to do, like you mentioned, the hunting aspect. As an open source project, we don't compete with them, we don't even collaborate with them, so it's not impossible in the future that basically when you install MISP, you will get a bundle with the Hive, Cortex, and so on, so you can get the full chain. So the sharing aspect, the collection aspect, and then all the chain for trade hunting and so on, which is indeed a good point. But we don't want to cripple MISP with ton of features, we want to keep it at what is good, sharing. We might go a bit more into the analyst aspect, estimative language, reclassifications, like you said, that not everyone has the same capability, so you want to improve that kind of analyst things. That's the thing that we are targeting into MISP, and to diverse the object type. In the next 2 weeks, we will release a new version with the MISP object to basically know being able to share completely new objects that are combined objects with things that you can even create yourself. But that's the core focus for MISP. So that means the trade hunting platform and so on, we usually recommend to bundle it with Hive, and the Hive has import-export, and you can share back what you do, you did into to the Hive. Thank you.
Okay, microphone in the back, please.
Yeah, I also got two questions. First is MISP import on the lists anytime soon?
MISP import?
Sticks import, sorry.
Okay, so we have already some sticks import into the MISP taxi interface, so it's basically an external project. The problem with sticks, and I didn't want to talk about sticks because it's a standard, but sticks itself has a lot of major limitations, especially the version 1.1. So we basically have this kind of import into the libraries, we have the support into the taxi interface external, but it's really depending on which tool generating the stick format. Because all stick format are all different between each tools. So for us, it's tough. Sticks is a standard, but it looks like that if you want to represent an IP addresses, you have, I'm not joking, I mean, you have six, or four, it's indeed the minimal, but at least we found six ways to represent an IP addresses, which is a bit awkward for a standard. So that's, well, we are part of the OASIS CTI group, where they do sticks 2.0 and 2.1 and so on. We try to bring some of the idea from MISP into sticks. It's difficult because behind, we are the alone open source project, you have Cisco, Blue Code, and whatever large organizations. But sticks import, the one that Anad Ward did for the import, is quite good for format that we know about. So if you know that this functionality or this software, the AnaWard import doesn't work, just send us some stick sample, and then we can basically improve the software. But the sticks import for us is just an external module, like we do for the export. What we would like to do is the export part of sticks 2.0 be a library, an open source library like the rest. But the thing is, our speed of doing development in MISP is much faster than what the OASIS standard is doing. So for example, financial indicators, we are supporting them, but even in sticks 2.0, you cannot do it. So for us, it's a bit challenging because it's a limited format right now. So, but indeed, import works with the taxi import. If you have feedback on that one, I would be really glad to hear that.
I didn't test the last version yet.
Okay, so if you can just bring back to us if you have any fading sticks files and so on, that's interesting.
Okay.
But something else that is quite important too, MISP itself, the software, know as standard, so the format, the MISP JSON format is an internet draft. So that means we advise tools that are using exporting MIST format to use a MIST JSON format, which is completely standard, open source. There is no string attached to it. For example, Joy Sandbox, other tools and so on are exporting into the JSON format. So you, like that, you benefit from the format itself. So we advise to use the native MIST format, but if you have sticks, just bring it to us. Thank you. Yeah. All
right. Thanks.
Okay, so back to the front.
Hello. Did you consider to introduce an incentive mechanism? Because I think your whole system only works if you share information, and I think it could be useful to have an incentive mechanism. So, for example, if I share a lot of information, I get more real time or something like that. Have you considered this?
Yeah. We consider various things. At the early beginning, we consider that people would be not able to get data anymore if they don't contribute information back after 3 months. What we have seen is a lot of organizations are not contributing back. So that means on our community, is around 30% are really contributing and 70% are getting the information. As a third, we don't really care because people, as long as they get the information and protect themselves, we are already fine with that. I mean, if they do the effort to get the data and do the protection is already a good move for them. Now we basically dish this part and we say, okay, everyone can get the information, use it commercially, non-commercially, as long as it's used for defense and so on. But now we are thinking of another model where it's more like a gaming model. So we basically want to gamify MISP where people get points. So that's more rewarding stuff. So like it's more socially interesting. So we don't want to provide something that is a detriment or a limitation to people, but once that the one that are contributing get a bit more, which is like rewardness of the group itself, or additional things like functionalities in the platform and so on, but not the data itself. That's the thing that we are. But it's an interesting discussion. If you have time later on, we can even discuss about it. Thank you.
Okay, another one in front, I guess.
First, thanks for the talks.
Okay.
And the second, I'm sorry if I miss it. How many different subject or parties join the project, and I don't know also if you have a taxonomy of them, like banks, security group, okay, and so on.
So if the thing is, maybe I didn't mention it in the talk, but you have the MIST software itself and the MIST community that you built using the MIST software. So if you want to run your MISP into, I don't know, the pharmaceutical sectors in Germany, you can run your MISP and being standalone, an island, never being connected. So that's one way to do it. If you look back at our community, that's the one at the, to mention at the early beginning, that's basically this one. It's 750 organizations. A significant percentage are banking sectors and financial sectors, payment processing and so on. And then a lot of industries. So industrial thirds are very common on those one, and a lot of ISPs for doing the takedowns and so on, and thirds that are linked to product thirds and so on. So that's the main categories that we have. Then you have a huge mix of others that are more security researchers, people using the data for doing research analysis. So we have a lot in academia and so on doing the use of the data. But that's, I would say, the fingerprint of our community. But it might be very different than others. I know that NATO has a huge community that they use for using MISP. We are connected to that one too. But that's, those ones are limited to thirds. So basically military thirds, national governmental thirds, and so on. But I mean, in ours, we have a kind of large spectrum of different organizations. If you want, I could give you the statistics. I need to dig into it. But it's, I think it's quite diverse. It's not so monomaniac. In the early beginning, it was more like malware reversers, AV vendors, antivirus vendors, and so on. And now it's drifting a bit more that it's starting to be more, I would say, diverse. Okay, thank you.
Okay, I don't see anyone else. Do we have another great question like all those before? No? Anyone? Otherwise, I would say thank you very much, Alexander.
Thank you.